Con Ed was doing work on the meters, and they put a note in our building saying at some point over the next 2 days, they need to turn off the power for like 2 minutes. And it happened to be right during our, of course, right? That's what always happens.
I'd like to welcome into the podcast Bob Troia. He's a technology entrepreneur and the co-founder of Awesome Labs. We first met back in around 2004, I think, and we'll talk about how that happened. But Bob, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's been too long.
It's been a very long time. Bob and I met each other. We met through the Word of Mouth Marketing Association, or WOMA, and it was a group of early, like, I mean, we were some of the first people in, I think, but there was this group of people doing like word of mouth marketing, building communities, and just trying to figure out customer loyalty and how people share information. And I remember your first company, when I first met you, you had a company called FanPimp. And that was, tell people what that was about. So I know what it was, but I'd like to hear you
talk. Yeah, so we're gonna sound like old men here because we're going to talk about way back in the day before really social media is what it was now, right? I mean, this is when everything was spread out. I mean, we're probably going to go back to it at some point, but like where you had communities that were very niche-based and, you know, message boards. And I had built a digital marketing company called Olive in the late 90s, early 2000s. And we were doing a lot of work with entertainment companies, just kind of fell into that area. So record companies, TV networks, movie studios, et cetera. And my background, I'm a software guy, technology guy. My business partner at the time was on the design side, but we both did strategy. And we had done some, because of the work we had done in the entertainment industry, we kind of saw that there was this concept of, like, for example, when bands would go on tour, they'd have street teams. And the idea would be they're going from city to city, and they really didn't have a way to mobilize or organize or get the word out. Again, before social media, we didn't have Twitter, we didn't have Instagram. And they would find, you know, kids in these different towns and say, hey, put up flyers, help us out. And in exchange, they'd give them tickets to the show, you know, just make them feel a little more on the inside. And the idea came about where we're like, well, how do we replicate that experience of helping emerging entertainment properties, let's say, whether it's a band or a video game or a movie, et cetera, get the word out? And really it came down to building these niche-based communities where the fans, and because they're like-minded, so you want to have them be able to connect with each other over a shared interest. But we built within it a reward system that basically was rewarding people, not for just really spamming and doing all the things you kind of see happening now, but it was more about sharing their genuine enthusiasm. Meaning, like, if there could be activities that would be like games and stuff that they're doing that just keeps them more engaged with the brand, but that would let them earn points that they could redeem for rewards. And the rewards could be things tangible, like merchandise from the company. It could be intangible, like you get to talk on the phone with your favorite, you know, musician or something like that. So these are really, could be experiential, could be tangible. And it was, when we built the platform, because we're working with a lot of, this time it was, again, entertainment, a lot of record companies, et cetera, it had the name FanPimp. And FanPimp just came out, I don't know, just needed a name and wanted something a little edgy. And people were like, oh, is it because you're pimping out the fans? And that was never like the joke of it. Like, it was more like the idea of empowering. It was actually putting it, the fans were the ones in power and in control. And as you can imagine, like, we really took over that niche in terms of working, you know, where it was almost like any time a new band was emerging from any record label or video game, they'd want to use our platform for, let's say, you know, it could be 6 months, some let it run for a few years. But we hit a point where we were like, okay, we want to work with some bigger brands now. Cause we think this concept of consumer based, these loyalty driven programs can go pretty big. And, you know, if we walked in, the tongue in cheek, you know, of our logo and our name and stuff was, you know, it would work for the entertainment industry, but we had to, you know, be kind of, well, we'll say grow up And we were growing as a company. You know, I had to worry about things like if someone misinterpreted the name or employees didn't, you know, were kind of embarrassed by the name. Or so we basically were also in the process of building new technology platforms. And so we rebranded as Affinitive a few years later. And Affinitive was just, again, another word that I kind of felt embodied what we were doing about, you know, bringing brands and consumers closer together in very organic ways. And while this was all happening, you mentioned the Word of Mouth Marketing Association was really just starting. And mm-hmm. it was a group of folks that I think they saw where this was all going to go, which eventually it did, where there's a lot of shady characters in the space manipulating folks to, you know, using techniques and tactics to kind of non-genuine kind of awareness and meaning, like, could be spamming or impersonation and all that. And the idea was to create this high ground right at the beginning, where we're kind of saying, look, we're putting ourselves, we're going to give ourselves this list of rules we're all going to abide by. And there's going to be players who out there who aren't going to follow it or not a part of the organization. But at least if someone tries to put a, you know, smack back at the entire industry, they can say, well, these are like legitimate companies in this space that are doing the right thing. And I think, you know, for the large part, I think WOMA still exists. I think it's sort of a different organization now. I've been out of it for a very long time, but I think one of the biggest things they were able to do was when the Federal Trade Commission was issuing guidelines around basically disclosure and whether it's influencers or just being transparency about sharing opinion, you know, if you're a consumer. WOMA, you know, I know I was in the drafts of some of those documents and I kind of feel like we at least contributed something that made its way into legislature. And, you know, granted, you look at what's going on today with disinformation and all that, you know, I kind of assumed it was going to eventually go that way, but I feel like we staved it off at least for maybe like a decade, I hope. You know, and we met, like you said, through the early days of WOMA, probably, I don't know if it was just through a conference that we were at or just because we were both in New York City at the time and we maybe probably crossed paths, just, you know, clients and projects and all of that. But yeah, and I think we met up through that and I think we got along really well and, you know, we've kept in touch over the years.
Yeah, I think you and I maybe worked on some of those projects together around disclosure and ethics and things like that. And I think WOMA is, they were acquired and folded into another trade organization. But I mean, I think one of the predictions that was early on with social when it first started becoming a thing was that advertising would eventually take it over. It would be a pay to play thing. And that's exactly basically what happened. So, and like you said, the consolidation of social media sites, you know, and the bad actors that are in there and how those large technology sites are the ones that are breaking the rules. And I would say they're making rules, but they really aren't making any. You know, they get called in to come testify and the people questioning them don't even know how to log into their email. And they're trying to ask some questions about data manipulation and disinformation. They have no idea what they're doing, but yeah, it was a really cool time back then to be on the part of something so early, be part of something so early on. And it's funny, I still am friends with and talk with a lot of people from those days who are still out there doing good work. And so speaking of that, you're working right now on a couple different things. You have an early stage company called Awesome Labs that you're the co-founder of, and you've produced an app called Awesome Meals. Can you tell people what that's all about?
Sure. So Affinitive was acquired by an agency network back around like 2013, 14. And, you know, I stuck around for a little bit longer. And then as I was trying to start looking at things I was really passionate about, you know, I'd spent the better part of almost two decades in digital marketing. And I feel like I'm pretty good at it, but it was something where you're like, you know what, where can I marry my mission and my passion and my purpose and all that? And I've always just been into data and health and wellness, and really just applying it to myself. I've been a longtime member of this movement called the Quantified Self Movement, where it's basically their slogan is knowledge through data, self-knowledge through data. And I was basically looking for ways, the things that kind of tickle my own interest. And Awesome Labs is just one of the things that myself and my friend Jeremy, my co-founder, who's another member of another community called the biohacking community, where it's sort of like Quantified Self. Not all those people are necessarily data focused, but they're basically looking for ways to optimize their body, their mind, et cetera. And whether that's through efficient exercise or nutrition supplements or other techniques, even things we're seeing now with a lot of stuff around stress and meditation and mindfulness and all this. So you're basically compiling, you're taking sort of ancient principles and mixing it with modern technology. So Awesome Labs is just a place where really we started just because I needed to build some tools for myself. But I just wanted something really simple. And really it started off with Jeremy and I were, again, my background's in technology, and we had largely, my last company never really got into mobile because mobile wasn't really a thing when I sold it. It's only come up in the last few years. So I was like, well, I should, as a developer, I'm like, I want to learn some new skills. I'm going to always be learning. So we were like, let's just build ourselves an app. And we were like, well, how do we do that? And we kind of dug it, rolled up our sleeves, learned all about the stuff over a period of months. And the first thing we wanted to build was a simple meal tracking app, meaning not counting calories, not these. There's some really robust apps out there that do all that. I just figured, when I was tracking my meals, I would just take pictures of everything. And because for me, it's a visual that representation. You can get timestamps out of that. You can get locations, et cetera. And so we built a simple app called Awesome Meal that was really just around that. And we released that a little while back. And then the next thing was I was at dinner one night with my girlfriend, and I was just talking about, she's a certified yoga and meditation instructor and all that. But I was like, well, there's all these things out there now, Headspace and Calm and all these other things. But I was really more into breath work. So just take the meditation piece out of it. It's more just about changing your body, your physiology, just through using different breathing techniques. And I was like, I just wish there was a utility that, I can put in the different inhale, exhale, hold times, and maybe some basic parameters, and make, just open my phone up, do a little breath work, close it, and be on my way. And so that was a thing where it was maybe a Friday night or something. I had the idea and was in the app stores on Wednesday, and, a real crude, initial version I built just to it was just a way to see what's out there. And then people started downloading it. And, and now there's tens of thousands of people that are using this thing. And, and I get emails all the time from people, and it's called Awesome Breathing. And, so as you notice, there's a trend with our app names.
Yeah. Awesome.
But it's one of those things where I built something for myself and built a really crude version, and it's been refined now over a period of time. But you get emails from people from doctors and psychologists and people, especially now with the amount of stress people are dealing with, where it was never meant to be something that would, doctors would be telling their patients to be using as, right? It's kind of help them deal with anxiety and all that. But it's definitely, it's really cool to see that, because it was something that we just built, and we were charging for it for a little while. And then when all the COVID stuff happened, I was, it wasn't the amount of money was whatever. It was okay. It wasn't crazy. So I said, let's just make it free. And, I'd rather just me making $2,000 is not really worth, versus just giving it away and maybe it reaches, thousands of people. And that's exactly what happened, with that. And so that's been a pretty cool, just thing to see. And, cause really what, Jeremy and I are really building some more ambitious things, over at Awesome Labs. It's, cause my back, again, with the quantified self component of a lot of this, with, self-gathered data and all, and whether it's, your wearable data or medical data and all that, I've built my own data warehouse over the years, and I was basically looking to rebuild a new version of it. And so a lot of what Jeremy and I are doing now is we're basically turning that concept into something that more people can use. And so that's the big project we're kind of working on. And, that's been keeping us busy. Just knowing I take things to the extreme on that data collection side, but I think for most people, that you make things relatively frictionless and passive in terms of how the data is collected, and you can surface up some insights that maybe, you know, they learn something about themselves every couple of days. And, you know, you might realize, like, I think you had mentioned something about, you know, you kind of track a lot on feel and kind of observe things. And, but yeah, like you might notice that, like, if you eat like a big animal protein meal in like the evening, like say after 8 PM, that may affect your sleep adversely, right? Versus moving that meal to lunch. Or doing things, you know, around the workout, or observing patterns with just how, I mean, a lot of people seem to be really focused now on sleep or stress and basically their body composition. Those are kind of like the main, you know, yep. main sort of thing going on. But also people are very busy. Even that we're not traveling as much right now, I think, you know, whether someone's at home with a house full of children that they're juggling, or actually like we were talking about, our day-to-days are very busy just doing work. I mean, it's, yep. it's you know, I'm full days on going on still. It's, you know, we want to make tools that they're really for people that don't have a lot of time, and make it really easy for them to kind of deal with all the stresses of modern living. So that's really awesome labs in a nutshell. You know, it's definitely like, you know, bootstrap early stage startup thing, which is nice to not have any, you know, it's, you're putting all the pressure on yourself with that. It's kind of right. like saying that you're investing in yourself essentially. But yeah, and it's been fun just because, you know, you it's good to, you can start something you with, like whether it's one person or several people, like, you know, people that you respect and you like, you just have a friendship with, you know each other. I see, you know, I've had experiences as well in the past where I started a company with someone I didn't really know. And, you know, and you might share a initial vision of something, but when the going gets tough and all that, and you're like, the personalities don't really mesh, it's, you know, and that wasn't Affinitive. That was, I spent about a year and a half on a startup that was doing 3D printing to replace plaster casts that can break your wrist. So, you know, the technology was easy. Like, we can make the cast. The challenge was you know, the U.S. medical system is like all about what insurance codes can you charge? How do you, it became a manufacturing and insurance play. And that just was like not getting me up out of bed in the morning. Like I'm passionate about things like performance and optimization and all that. I think there are people that are probably the right fit for that sort of, you know, concept. Like, I mean, you know, there's healing and all that, but I think that play of it being more of a manufacturing play and insurance code play, like, yeah, there are folks that maybe really could deal with that. I didn't make a call out.
But it's also one of those things, and this is there's a consistent theme, which is innovation. You see something happening in the market or whatever, and you see the opportunity to innovate and create something. And with 3D printing and with casts in particular, you did that. Like, it's done. We innovated. And then, like, now you got to get into the nitty gritty of, like you said, insurance codes and billing and things that just aren't innovative at all. You know, that's to me, at least that's what I'm.
I mean, it's definitely like a case where, you know, certain entrepreneurs, you know, you're some people like to be the builder, but like, I love building things, like creating, you know, operationally, I think I enjoy certain aspects of the operations side, but like when I had Affinitive, that company, like, I built all the original software for that company. Like, I coded it. But then when we became a bigger company, I was running the business. Like, I had a team of developers. I had, like, I would be in product meetings and stuff, but I missed, you know, like, I wasn't writing any of that code anymore, to be honest. And so, like, I would be home on a weekend, and I'd be sitting with my computer in front of me and my laptop, and I'd be like, maybe I'll do some coding. And my girlfriend would be like, are you still working? I was like, no, this is fun. I'm actually like coding some stuff because like, I don't get to do that during the work week, you know? And so, I mean, for me, that's been like one of the major things over the last few years has just been, you know, I'm still trying to learn something new every day.
But I also believe that there's a piece of, so just looking at like corporate America, for example, And you see this with a lot of companies where, you know, not everybody that starts off in their 20s ends up at the executive level in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. And there's a pyramid of sorts. And by being a person who knows how to actually do something and is investing in themselves and innovation and always learning, you never have to worry about not being that person. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you never have to be the person who's aged out or pushed out because you're obsolete. You're always looking for the next thing or something new or making it better or just building something. I think that's a common, at least from what I see, especially in the agency world, but even other places, you know, it's very easy to become obsolete. And always staying up on technology and understanding what's going on, having ideas, having, you know, taking your free time and investing it is something I tell my kids about, quite frankly. Not that you don't deserve downtime, not that you shouldn't have downtime, you absolutely should, but you should always have that thing you can fall back on that you're passionate about, that you love to do, and like you're doing now, trying to make the world a better place using it. So
I think skill sets you develop they're all transferable. It's like, even if I'm not running like a digital agency or, you know, some technology enabled, you know, marketing company, I would still apply that skill set. It works for myself, right? If I'm building my own business, I'm going to use those tools for myself to help with that. So, you know, I think that answers sort of the one question about, you know, that those skills, you're not losing those skills. You can reuse them. Maybe you're not selling to clients, but you can apply, you know, you have them in the bag for yourself, especially if you're doing a startup. Like, I don't have to hire someone. I can literally just do it. And then the second about age, you know, I see this all too often. I mean, it's definitely industry to industry, but, you know, you can think of software. Like, you hear about, this guy was a COBOL programmer in the early 80s, and now he's like in the 60s and there's no work because he has no skill set. Well, I would argue that it's not an ageism thing. I would argue that a lot of the people, they get very comfortable in their positions and they don't have to learn anymore. And then stuff just passes them by. Like, if you're a digital marketer right now, and let's say you're our age, right? When we started with WOMA and all that other stuff, like, I think I shared the stage at the first WOMA conference with someone from Friendster. I remember the first, I think I spoke right after him. And, I think if someone was still like talking about some of those platforms, and now and meanwhile, there's like things like TikTok and all this other stuff happening. Like, you know, if I was still doing digital marketing side, like, even if I'm not using those platforms, like, I don't live on TikTok. I barely even use Twitter anymore, to be honest. But I'm aware. I know how to use. I mean, I'd like to stay on top of it in terms of like, what is it? How does it work? Instead of being ignorant. Because you never know, like, you may need to, if I can hold a conversation about what it is and how to use it, then I feel like there's still some relevancy there. But when I see something, I go, I don't get it. Well, is that because you're old? Like, people go, oh, I'm old. This is like what the kids are using. You're like, no, it's like, you just, you know, people are just tuning it out. And I feel like, at least that's just my personality. Like, I always like to learn enough about something so I can like kind of go, okay, I get it. It's not for me, but I get it. You know, that's,
yep,
way I approach it.
It's kind of like country music. No, I'm joking.
Well, it depends what kind of country. If you go on public, exactly. You know,
no, I mean, real, no, real country is fine. I like real country music. I don't like the poppy, whatever.
No.
I remember we were in North Carolina, and we were at a place called Nelly's, and it's owned by the Jonas Brothers' mother. I don't know her name is Nelly, obviously, but that's the connection there. But so they handpicked a guy from Texas who was playing the bars in Nashville to come and be like their resident performer with his band. And so we were sitting at the booth. We both play music, so I'm right by the stage, and we're having our meal. And it's a fantastic restaurant, by the way. If you're ever in Belmont, North Carolina, near Charlotte, go to Nelly's. But the guy leans over to our table and he says, because we were singing along and clapping and having fun. And he was like, you guys are great. Thank you so much. What do you want to hear? And one of our friends' daughters who was with us, she mentioned one of the more current country artists, and he looks at her and he goes, I said country music. We all started laughing hysterically. So yeah, there's that. But
you can apply that to any genre. I think if you take, you know, like, I just watched that whole hip hop evolution series on Netflix, and like, you know, you go back to like the pioneers and stuff, and then you see like the current like number one song in the country. It's like, no, it's just gone.
I don't have a problem with like modern music and what have you. It's just like, I do have that appreciation for like the original or the person who made it first. And, you know, you could argue that creativity is obviously in the eye of the beholder and all those things. But, I just don't see like it's not the depth of it. That's just not there for me. I don't know what it is. I tune out most stuff. I tune out. And that's also why I get into different genres and try new things. I mean, living in Puerto Rico, we listen to a lot of reggaeton, and we never did. I mean, prior to moving here, we never listened to reggaeton.
Well, I live in South Williamsburg, Brooklyn. It's mm-hmm. reggaeton every car that goes by my apartment building. So we get plenty of that. Yeah.
Who do you recognize any of the songs? Do you not listen to it?
Well, isn't every reggaeton song, it basically has the same beat, right?
Yeah. They have that. It sounds like a horse galloping. So, a horse galloping. Like,
boom, 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 boom. So every time a car goes by, you're hearing the bass, right? So you're hearing just that. I can't really hear the vocals and the instruments. You just hear the bass and the drum. So yeah. It always sounds like the same song going by.
Well, so I want to talk a little bit more about the quantified self movement tell me about the things that tell the listeners and me, what are the things that you track and what experiments or things have you done, or what are some of the biggest takeaways that you've gotten from it?
Sure. I mean, I think most people out there have probably done some level of tracking in their lifetime. I mean, quantified self, to be honest, isn't just about your body and your biology. I mean, quantified self is actually just, it's because self knowledge through data. So it could be something as simple as tracking your finances. I mean, that's essentially you're looking, you know, you're identifying spending trends. Or I know people who would be doing things like tracking, like interactions with like social interactions with other people. But a lot of it, obviously, because of now the data and the tools we have, and whether it's wearables or lab tests and other stuff, we can really get to understand a lot more about ourselves, our bodies. And that's where like the biohacking piece sort of overlaps that. And, you know, so tracking, I mean, for me, there's different layers of it. So on a very simple level, just wearing like some sort of activity fitness tracker, depending on the day of the week, I may have up to like three of them on, because they might be collecting similar data, but they don't always agree. So I'll be looking at things like, you know, okay, people count steps. I don't, you know, it's a proxy to, I guess, your activity level, because you're moving around. But, you know, to me, an intense workout, like if I'm doing like a weight workout versus, you know, I just went out and walked around the block. I mean, yeah, I think it's important to get both types of exercise, but you can kind of see your general activity, heart rate, sleep trends. So even sleep, it's not just about how long did I sleep, but you can understand sleep stages. Was I in a deep sleep, which is restorative, versus REM, which is when basically dream state, which can show you, it's more of a, where you're consolidating information. You know, knowing what time you go to bed, wake up, the disturbances are really important. Seeing, because someone might realize like throughout the night, they're actually waking up multiple times. They don't even realize it. And that could be for a number of reasons, whether it's just the temperature in the room, or they've got some actually a minor apnea, something like that. You know, we've got with other data, I mean, weight, body composition. So having something like a smart scale, so just like a Wi-Fi enabled scale in my bathroom every day, I can do it, and that'll give me a weight, body fat, muscle mass, et cetera. There are better ways to do that, like if you go into like other facilities, but for home use, I mean, these scales cost just a few $100s, you know, that sort of thing. There are devices and tools that we'll use, maybe not every day, but when I need to like check on certain things. So like blood sugar, which you think of like diabetics pricking their finger and measuring their blood sugar every day. Well, now a lot of non-diabetics are using it, those tools. And mainly because we want to understand metabolic health, understanding the effects of food and lifestyle and stuff on our, keeping our glucose levels, not just optimized, but you want to keep them in that range as much as possible. So there may be cases where like your blood sugar, you may want it to spike a little bit, maybe like intense exercise. There's like a spike, and then that's why when people eat a banana after a workout, because they basically want to trigger a response in the body to get the your body to pull all that glucose into the muscle. But there are now devices called continuous glucose monitors, which are about the size of a quarter, and they have a little tiny needle that goes under the skin. You don't even feel it. It just kind of goes under the skin, under the outer layer of skin, and it samples the interstitial fluid. So it's collecting blood glucose data nonstop. So I think every 15 minutes, it'll take a reading, and you can scan it with your phone as well, take a reading, and you can now get like a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week plot of your blood sugar. So you can see what happens after every meal. Like, what did I eat? Oh, well, if I eat that white rice, that's going to spike my blood sugar and keep it elevated for 2 hours. Whereas if I ate an apple, well, there's a little bit of a spike, but then, you know, it goes down really fast. Or maybe you eat the same foods, and if I eat and then walk around the block for 10 minutes, that little bit of exercise buffers the effects. You might see, like, going back to sleep, maybe you're waking up in the middle of the night and you realize, well, look, my blood sugar is dipping at 3 a.m. and that's where I tend to wake up. And you're realizing, okay, so that's something you have to then address. Maybe it's that you have to add a little bit, slow digesting carbs with your dinner, which will allow your blood sugar to not dip down in the middle of the night. We can also look at things like ketones, which are, so our bodies, we can use glucose or ketones for energy. And most people that eat the standard American diet are probably running off mostly carbohydrates, so glucose. But when you hear about people like fasting and or going ketogenic, that just means that their body is actually running off of ketone bodies, which are basically the burning of fat. It's a byproduct of metabolizing fats. And so a lot of people they want to kind of maintain higher levels of ketones. Those are, you know, some basic things. There's all sorts of lab testing you can do. So whether you go for your annual checkup and they're going to take some, you know, draw some blood and look at kind of a basic panel of markers, whether it's like minerals and total blood counts and all that. There are a lot of specialized tests now where you can look at things like what's going on in the bacteria in your gut. You may find that you've got some dysbiosis going on there, like people that may have issues like irritable bowel syndrome and other issues are because there's an imbalance in what's going on there, or they've got some damage in the gut that they need to then start repairing and healing, whether that's through combination of, you know, changing their diet, eliminating certain foods, et cetera. But you know, there's the things you can measure now can go pretty out there. Right. You know,
sounds like most people,
yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot of it, you know, I'll track a lot of things, but because I've been doing it for such a long time, a lot of it is, like I said, passive. It's being done in the background. So I don't have to obsess over it. The data's there. So if I want to go back in time, so like I'm collecting in my home, I have two different air quality monitors. So it's sampling the air quality in my, like, whether it's just the level of, and not just humidity and temperature, but looks for dust, certain size dust particles, and looks for things like volatile organic compounds. So you've got chemicals under your kitchen sink or a certain cabinets and furniture has this like cheap that smell. You can tell when has a kind of like gasoline smell. You know, it's off gassing, carpets off gas. So if you want to have an understanding about improving your indoor environment, so I look at things like air quality.
What are you using to track that?
So I have two devices. I have one that's called the FooBot, FOOBOT, and it just connects to your Wi-Fi network. It's got sensors in the bedroom. You can access the data real time on your phone, or if you want to download it, you can download it. And it's nice because you can then, depending on where you live, like let's say you live in a home that tends to get very humid, and maybe you're saying, well, you can actually have it trigger other devices. So you might say like, okay, if this FooBot detects that my humidity goes above 70%, let's kick on the dehumidifier, or, you know, just have something go on with that. Just to help with, or, you know, if you have an air purifier, let's say I've also got several air purifiers that will, like HEPA filters that will suck dust particles out of the air. We just tend to get, just because living where I live, even with windows closed, you can get dust and crap come through the windows. And so I like to just run it, you know, every now and then, because it basically cleans all that dust out of the air. Or if you have, you know, it's probably just as bad too. If you have pets and other anything with dander, that could be an issue. So there's another device called Plume, P-L-U-M-E, that makes it's a personal air quality monitor. So it actually It's about the size of like a deck of playing cards, and has a little clip, a leather strap on it, so you can actually attach it to like your belt buckle or to a backpack. So I can walk around New York City, and it's going to also map my GPS location. So I'll get a map showing where I was and what the air quality is of where I was. So I would do it like when I would commute. I would like be like, oh, let's see. And I go down to the subway, you see how terrible the air was down there. And then when I go walking to, you know, through my neighborhood, it was like, oh, it's relatively good. But if I walk near like a trafficy street, you'd see like those levels from car exhaust and all that would increase a lot. So you kind of get, you know, so maybe if for a commute, okay, if you have to ride the subway for 10 minutes, that's kind of what it is. But I know for like, if I'm going to go for a run, I would probably want to avoid those areas where the air quality was a lot worse. You know, like I could see like the red areas on the map, and because you're inhaling those, you might be inhaling small dust particles, break, you know, dust, all those other things. So, I would try to find a route that, you know, had the best air quality.
Interesting. I look at the air quality, right now we're in this, like, we're in hurricane season. So even just leaving the neighborhood and heading out and seeing the ocean and seeing some hills, you can see the haze that's out there. And my first thought every time is to check the air quality on you know, WeatherBug or whatever app I'm using, just to see what is it like. But this is interesting. I to localize it like that is actually way cooler. As you said, just so you can know. I mean, if you know it's going to affect you. I don't have any like lung issues or asthma or things like that, but I can definitely feel it. There are certain environments that I've been in where you could definitely tell there's something going on in the air. So that's actually like, I think like you said, you can analyze anything down to whatever number or any metric that you're trying to grab out of it. But I think it is helpful. Like you said, if you have asthma or things like that, to be able to track those things.
Those are more environmental. Those are more environmental, but like you can still measure, like I can measure things like my VO2 max, which is a gauge of my lung capacity. Like that's when you see people hooked up with the tubes and they're on a treadmill running, like it's all out, like basically. And with COVID, I mean, I've been using what's called a pulse oximeter for a number of years. And now like everyone's gotten, because it's showing your body's oxygen saturation. Yeah. And one of the big symptoms people with COVID were having were their oxygen levels were dropping. And so, you know, it's something where I think everyone should just have, like, they're so inexpensive. Yeah. And you can check it, and within like, you know, it gives you your heart rate and your pulse oximetry within a matter of seconds. And, you know, along with things like, you know, you can measure your temperature, et cetera, with, you know, I'd also have a, you know, digital thermometer on hand as well.
We've had that. We actually bought that right when the COVID thing started. We got one of the last ones at Walgreens locally to check the air, your oxygen levels. Cause we're, you know, obviously it's something new. We've never dealt with this before. And so there's probably a level of, you know, overcompensation, but it's been helpful. It's been helpful to know. I'd rather know than not know. So did you ever get it in? You ran track at Penn State. So did you ever experiment back then? Were you this aware or that into this type of, you know, monitoring and tracking these types of things back then or no?
Sure. I mean, we didn't have the tools like we had now, right? So things I definitely mean, but in terms of measuring, you know, body weight and looking at performance and being like, well, if I just trying to hit a certain amount of caloric intake and, you know, do I add certain things, supplementation? I mean, even my belief system at the time about what was considered, I guess, you know, when you're 18, it's a lot different than when you're 28. In terms of like, I was less concerned about it was more about the overall quantity of food, making sure, I mean, I wasn't eating McDonald's every day or anything like that, but I was definitely like my belief system of food where I was always like, oh, everything's gonna be low fat and whatever. And, you know, chicken without the skin and egg whites and all. And I had, was when I was like 28 was when I realized like, no, I have to change that belief system. It was actually more about the quality of the food. You actually need those healthy fats. And once I did that, like everything improved.
Yeah.
You know, so I was probably, you get into the real world and you start working, you know, you start, people get a lot of shape and that kind of happened to me in my mid to late 20s. That was probably the worst, you know, worst shape there. And then as I started really diving more into the investigating, you know, what am I doing here? Why am I exhausted? What's going on here diet wise? And, you know, cause I was exercising all the time still, but I was still like, it was exhausted. Even if, you know, even if you like, you maybe look good on the outside, you're just a wreck on the inside. Right. And kind of peel back all those layers of the onion. And, you know, and I spent like a good 7-8 years kind of healing a lot of things. Like there was stuff where I had gotten some Lyme disease from a tick bite that, you know, which I caught really early on. So I didn't suffer any of the long-term effects of it, but the antibiotics you're given wreck your gut. And so you're basically, when we talked about looking at, you know, what's going on there with bacteria and stuff. Well, you have damage inside, you have to heal. And so it's just things that, but in college, it was more like, you know, your workouts are given to you by the coaches. You're pretty resilient then. So it's like you could come on, we're in college. It's like, you're going to party every weekend. And like, you're gonna be fine the next day. Like you bounce right back. You know, yeah. You know, now 18-year-old me versus the 48-year-old me, it's, you know, from that standpoint, no. It's a different, you know, time. So, but we, you know, I was mostly looking more at like, you know, performance and goal setting and times and distances. And then, really it was more like, you know, if the coach said, hey, you know, you need to put on 5 pounds of muscle or something like that, I'm like, well, how do I do that? You know, and you're going to work out and maybe there's a strength coach there who's going to tell you, this is the way we're going to work out. And is that, but you really can't question it, right? When you're on it, like, it's really hard to do your own thing from that standpoint when you're on any kind of organized team, because you're kind of like I used to get yelled at after practice because we would do our running workouts, we'd go to the track, and then we'd come back to the facility and there's the weight room. And I go in there and I was like curling, and the coach is like, why are you doing that? I'm curling. I'm he's like, but you're not going to eat. What event are you using your biceps? I want to look balanced, you know? So I'd have to sneak in and bang out, you know, some curls, you know, but I could, you know, other stuff like, okay, squats and other stuff was totally fine. But like, you know, it was all about lower body. Like I was doing like multi events. So it was a lot of jumping and throwing, that kind of stuff. So it was, yeah. So anyway, back to, you know, those days, you know, we just didn't have the ability to track the stuff we do now. It really wasn't until probably, you know, I would say the first sort of devices were really coming out 2011, 2010. Mm-hmm. That's when stuff that you like, where I didn't have to spend $50,000 on a piece of equipment where I can, you know, maybe get something for $500. That was probably, you know, in the early 2010s.
Well, even now, the accessibility for some of the stuff, the portable EKG that pairs to your phone, you know, there's all different things you can get now that are, they're really like affordable, to quite frankly. I'd be interested in running some tests on me just to see how I'm doing with certain things. I have a fairly average, like my sleep schedules. I've gotten to that age where I just wake up. Even if I'm tired, I still get up. So I'm really trying to keep or be cognizant of like when I go to sleep, as opposed to like, I didn't watch the end of, I turned it off because the shooting was so bad, but I had no intention of watching the end of Lakers versus Blazers last night, cause I knew it'd be well into when I should be sleeping. And so we talked about this before we started the podcast, but you know, I do some of the stuff without tracking it, but I know what I'm conscious of what it is that I'm doing and how it's going to make me feel and, you know, the consequences of it. But I would love to get more actual data to understand it because I'm still, well, if and when things get back to normal, you know, I'm playing in basketball leagues against 30-year-olds. So that's a, you know, people don't think, oh, you look great. It's not that. It's my reflexes are a little slower. I can't run as fast as I used to. All those kind of things that I need that advantage at this age. I need that advantage if just to keep up, let alone, you know, be competitive or even good. One of the things
one thing about the data side is, I mean, people can approach it from two different ways. Like, you can just look at the data from just understanding yourself better, right? Be like, okay, hey, this is a cool insight I got about myself, versus some people will then on the other side of it will say, well, I'm trying to fix something. Like, I, you know, they're going to say, I sleep like crap or whatever. And then they get a device and they think that this is like the single source of truth of data. And like, but you might wake up and say, I feel great. But then your like device says, no, you slept like crap last night. And you're like, well, who do I believe? I feel great. data might not be correct. There's a lot of ways that data can be incorrect. And people, there's actually a term that came out called orthosomnia, which are like the people who get stressed out because they're freaking out about looking at their sleep data. Like they think that like it's telling them like everything is crap, and they're like, and they're, instead of saying my gut will always override, because these devices, like I said, they're good, but they're not foolproof. There's definitely a lot of ways where you can get incorrect data. So if you have a trend, like if you have, you know, a year of data and you see this one outlier, you might be like, well, what happened last night? Oh, the device rotated around my wrist, or my arm fell asleep or something. And like the data is wrong. So you have to understand the context of why it would not be correct. But right. Some people just freak out and they start going, oh, I'm dying. I'm losing my, you know, I don't sleep. And
well, have you ever, I mean, I had that. I went into, we had a home blood pressure kit or whatever, the electronic ones. And I scheduled a doctor's appointment after using it because I was like, what in the hell? Like, how is this? And then when I went in, she's like, those things are rarely ever accurate. Let me take it right now. And she did it the old fashioned way with the, you know, measuring your heart rate and your pulse and all that stuff. And it was, you know, back to normal.
Honestly, you'll actually find when you go to the doctor, actually, you tend to have a higher reading because
you're not relaxed. Yeah. I went in the one time. I had an appointment for my son, and we were running late for it. And and part of it was because I stopped at Dunkin' Donuts beforehand, which I never do, but I was exhausted and just whatever. So I got a large iced coffee with a shot of espresso in it. And then we were running late for my son's appointment. So my anxiety, everything was up, right? My heart rate was up. Everything was elevated. Take him to his appointment, get him checked in. He's in and out. We go to my appointment and they asked me, they took my blood pressure and they were like, are you feeling okay? I'm like, I feel fine. Why? I said, I could tell that my heart rate's up because I had all that caffeine. And they're like, we need you to lie down, sir. And they actually hooked me up so they could monitor me until it dropped. And I was like, it's just the caffeine. But yeah, same. I've had that happen before where you go in and it's several points higher than normally would be. So not always a good choice to have caffeine before you do that. I was going to ask you about travel because, you know, we follow each other on social and da-da-da, and I know you like to travel, which has nothing to do with, you know, this stuff. But I was wondering, well, it could actually. So I wanted to ask you about your favorite places to travel and do you monitor when you're still on vacation or traveling, and are the numbers any different?
Sure. Well, in terms of places to travel, I mean, I like to travel, but I don't travel that often. I mean, I tend to, it usually is around conferences. Like, you know, there's a lot of like biohacking type conferences and I'll speak at around the world. But obviously now we're not traveling as much, but I definitely like, you know, there's cities that I love going to, but I wouldn't necessarily want to live there full time. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I always have a great time on the West Coast, whether it's San Francisco or LA, probably, you know, I don't see myself really wanting to live there. I always have an amazing time in Austin. You know, when I go to Europe, there's obviously beautiful cities like London and Rome and Amsterdam. I spent some time in Finland. But with tracking, I mean, the couple of things that I've noticed were, with blood sugar, if when I was doing like more cross country, types of business trips, my blood sugar would go up, for a period of days after, like, let's say I flew from New York to San Francisco and I'd get there, it would stay elevated for a few days. So like travel definitely has like air travel has a kind of, I think, because maybe there's a stress in the body and that triggers cortisol, and cortisol can spike your blood sugar. So any stress basically can spike your blood sugar. And but just looking at things like sleep patterns and that sort of stuff, yeah, I definitely look at that. I mean, I've had the best sleep I've ever had that I've tracked was so maybe like 4 years ago. Went on a family trip. We went out to Big Bend, which is like Western Texas, like right on the Rio Grande. And it was a 4-day kayak trip or canoeing trip, sorry, camping, canoeing. No, there's zero cell phone service. You don't see another human being for 4 days other than just our group. And you sleep in nature, you're outside every day. And I had the best, just, I think just being detached from any technology or like external stuff, whether it's cell phones, antennas, electronics, just in front of your computer, all that stuff. I just had the most amazing, you know, probably just being in nature, you know, I just had a huge effect on it for me. So, which is, you know, the complete opposite of living in New York City.
Right. That's one of the things that the kids, so we, our neighborhood's internet is not good. And so when the kids complain about it, I'm like, just go to bed. Like, you don't have to stream anything. You don't have to be playing anything. You could just read a book and go to bed. And that's a great solution to the Wi-Fi being terrible. Just go back to, you know, just go play outside, put the electronics down and just go to bed. And I've noticed that too. I don't game nearly as much as I did when I lived in New York. We had fast internet. So you could go online and you could have, you know, all the devices in the house connected and be gaming and all that stuff. And because it's difficult here, I actually kind of appreciate it because it's not as accessible. Therefore I'm less likely to do it. And, I do sleep well. I mean, I noticed when we moved to the Caribbean, even when we were vacationing here, going from the Catskills here, my body feels wonderful with this heat and just, I'm more relaxed in general. I don't have, there's stress about things. Like there's always going to be stress. But I feel just more like slowed down and relaxed. The whole island time and learning how to just disconnect. And I think it's fantastic. I've had, for me, this is probably the best sleep I've had has been in Puerto Rico. Just, it's relaxing. Yeah. You know, you just go to bed to, especially when we were, you know, before we had a full house or lived in a neighborhood as vacationers, like staying by the ocean and going to bed at night and just watching the sunset. And I don't know, it's very calming and it's something I really appreciate. And I'm going to start tracking more stuff. Like I said, I know there's some things I know, and I know how my body reacts to certain things, but it'd be cool, I think, to understand there are certain foods I just flat out won't eat. I don't eat I don't eat candy of any kind or soda or anything that has like a lot of sugar in it. I avoid it. And I feel better for it. I don't have those crashes. I don't have that awful feeling afterwards, but I'm going to start tracking more. So Bob, I want to thank you for coming on. If you want to connect with Bob, by the way, if you want to learn more about what he's doing with quantifying himself, go to quantifiedbob.com. And are you on Twitter as Quantified Bob as well, right?
Yeah. Instagram and Twitter, yep. Quantified Bob.
And then if it's more business stuff, he is at Bob Troia, TROIA on Twitter. And is your website also bobtroia.com?
Yeah, you can go there. The Awesome Labs website is at isjustawesome.com. And you can see some of the things we're working on there.
That's cool. I actually downloaded the breathing app while we were talking because I want to try it.
New updates coming out any day now. So some cool features.
It was so great catching up with my good friend, Bob. I love talking to entrepreneurs and people who are doing things, and he's the consummate tinkerer. You know, he loves to make stuff and do things, and those are the kind of people I love to surround myself with. If you like this episode, by the way, please remember to rate and subscribe and all that kind of stuff. And if you're on Twitter, you can follow the podcast at TDBPOfficial. I'm at D. Binkowski on Twitter. Again, thanks for listening. This is episode 8, and this has been a lot of fun. So again, I hope you're enjoying it. If you want to drop us an email, you can do that at pod@davidbinkowski.com. And we have more great episodes coming for you soon.